College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you, laying this down on a mid-Thursday morning. A little bit later on in the show, Jacob Modleski, the standout from Notre Dame, caught up with Brentley, get a little sense of the Walker Cup experience, what life is like in South Bend, and as you told me, a well-spoken young man, and not a surprise. His background story, everything about Jacob's intriguing.
Yeah, very, very well spoken, super smart. He was actually just getting ready to go to some sort of mathematics class that it sounded way too smart for me. So it was enjoyable. You know, I feel like sometimes he gets a little overlooked playing at Notre Dame, playing in the Midwest. And I think hopefully people will listen and start following him a little bit closer.
He's, what, top 10, top 15 ranked amateur in the world. Yeah. Guy's one of the best players in college in amateur golf. Looking forward to that conversation. A lot to recap. We'll start with the men, one of the biggest events of the fall, the Ben Hogan Collegiate at Colonial. Talk about trophies. Did they have enough? Four teams share the team title.
Melt it down.
A five-man playoff for the tour exemption. The four teams, North Carolina, Vandy, Texas, and Virginia, co-winners. The five-man playoff for that tour exemption. Albert Hansen survives, the young man from Georgia Tech, beating Ben James, Willie Walsh, Christian Moss, and William Jennings. It could have been a lot easier if Ben James would have cooperated.
Yeah, Ben James, a tough finish for him. And he really didn't seem like he had his stuff in the final round, but he birdied three straight holes late on that back nine. And you thought, like, this was going to be Virginia's. He was going to get another tour exemption and steps onto the 18th tee box, par four. Virginia's up by two in the team standings. Ben James is up by two individually, misses the green with his approach, stubs his chip, and then three putts from 45, 50 feet. So, knocks Virginia back into a tie and knocks himself into that playoff, which obviously Albert Hansen advances. And, you know, this is just one of those learning experiences where if you're a player like Ben James and you're number one in PGA Tour U and you have all these expectations, these kind of moments are going to be, you know, he's going to be able to look back on this and say, all right, what can I do differently? And so hopefully he can take the positives from that.
Yeah, it's what are we as parents of youngsters? Yours a lot younger than mine, right? You gotta let your kids fail. You gotta let them fall on their face. But surprisingly,
I did yesterday in soccer practice. She fell and hurt her elbow.
Did she get back up though?
She did. She cried for a little bit.
All right. Well, that's all right. Wait. Three and a half, four. So three, tears still allowed. Mine almost 10 and 12, a different story. But, you know, things that jump out to me in the way you wrote the rundown, you know, to see North Carolina and Vanderbilt getting a share of things. I think we touched on it last week. For two or three years, it was like, are you taking the Tar Heels or the Commodores to win it all? And neither did. And there's been some valleys, but to see what Vandy has done this fall, to see how Wells Williams has played, among others, North Carolina had a chance at Shore Acres in the Stevens Cup. It's almost when that expectation from the outside goes away, or maybe you're ranked 8th or 10th or 12th, not 1 or 2, that's part of the dynamic. And I bring it up, Brentley, because I had a conversation at Shore Acres with Andrew DiBattista. And he knew last year's lineup looked a little different. And he said, I take the blame because I lowered the standard, if you will. And he said, I've learned, well, the standard still needs to be where the standard is. We just have to get there. And I thought it was some interesting insight. You know, let's be honest, all teams have rosters where you're like, ooh, yeah. I'm not sure how good we are. So maybe I hesitate to say make it easier, but Andrew's like, God, I got away from what got us to be really good, and I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah, that's a good message. And I think a lot of teams further down this leaderboard may be trying to still get to that standard, right? I mean, you look at what stands out, ASU at 12, they had such a great start to the year. Auburn gets Jackson Coyven back into the lineup. and they finish eighth. Didn't have Logan Riley, but you know you got to think maybe him and Jake Albert, the two freshmen, are interchangeable at this point. Connor Graham, poor final round. Texas Tech is eighth. And then Oklahoma, this is probably the biggest thing. You know, these are always kind of the things that you don't want to see. But apparently Jay Summey a little bit banged up, didn't go. Who knows how long he's going to be out. But I guess it's a good thing that it's October 2nd and he can get healthy. But a lot of teams that aren't quite living up to the expectation so far in this one.
But it's everything we talk about in the fall. While important to win, have success, every coach will tell us behind the scenes, off the record, of we'll take our lumps now. That's okay. But I have not kind of seen that clear-cut number one team. Everyone has seemingly shown flashes. You know, when you go to your preseason top five or top 10, you know, they'll have that week and then that moment. And then, as you mentioned, like ASU, oh gosh, a little bit off the beaten path, which gets me excited, even though early, of, ooh, April and May could get really, really dodgy for some teams. And again, it's way too early, but I love the path we're going.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Oklahoma State probably has done maybe what they needed to do on the backs of that national championship. But there's some squads, you know, especially out west, like a Utah, like a New Mexico, who we'll talk about here in a little bit, like a BYU, who didn't really play too well at the Blessings. They finished third there. But there's going to be some new faces, I feel like, in you know, in that last 15, that in that final eight here in 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, it's always cyclical, 3, 4, 5 years, new faces, new teams, which keeps it fresh and exciting. We go to the Winded Memorial, Illinois, 36 under par, 6-shot win over New Mexico. Mesa Flor of the Lobos wins individually. Notre Dame, 5th, SMU, 8th, USF, 11th, East Tennessee State, 15th. So we're to what we just said. Things are interchangeable here, and for some of the coaches, they're probably wishing they weren't as interchangeable.
Do we know if Northwestern's still playing football at that temporary stadium?
I believe so. Is it called Ryan Field, right? I think there's like another year.
What if they had to do that for golf? You had to play at a temporary he just built a course just for a couple years.
The old temp greens, just stick a flag, cut out a little 10-yard thing short of the putting surface.
Do we know? I mean, I'm not going to disparage Knollwood Club because it's awesome. I mean, that area of Chicago, north of Chicago, Lake Forest, where you have, you know, Knollwood and Skokie and Shore Acres. I mean, is there any, I mean, there might not be a better, that's definitely top five in terms of spots in golf, right, in this country?
Yeah. Oh, and the dinner opportunities in Lake Forest, as we went out on a couple different occasions, really good meals. What a great area.
What's the best spot?
We went to Sophia Steakhouse, I believe, one night.
Steakhouse, wow.
Yeah, excellent. And I can't remember the name of a really good Mexican restaurant. It was the vibe. It had a Winter Park vibe to it. And you can relate to that just outside of the Orlando area. It was enjoyable.
Yeah, and I think we got to, you know, give props to New Mexico. I mean, this is a program, obviously they lose their longtime head coach Glenn Milligan a couple years ago, who went over to Mizzou, and you know, the job that Jake Harrington's done, you know, got them to the NCAA championship last year, showed some glimpses, and he's has a kind of a roster that's starting to come into its own. I mean, he got a nice transfer in Johnny Clark from Oklahoma State, a couple seniors. You know, we mentioned Mesa. Alvaro Portillo is probably their best player. And then they get a kid from Germany, Emil Albers, who has a chance to be a pretty good international piece for them. So, and then I think Clark Sonnenberg's a transfer as well. So this is a pretty, you know, pretty formidable team that it probably might sneak up on some people.
You talked about BYU finishing third at the Blessings Collegiate. Arkansas won there, taking care of business at home. They beat Louisville by 17. John Daly II wins individually by two. What a 2025 it has been for him. You know, making some changes, things getting better. We saw the run he made at Olympic in the U.S. Amateur. John Daly II can play golf. And it's more than just a name when we first saw him start at Arkansas.
I think John Tyson has to do whatever he can to get a PGA championship in like 6 or 7 years at Blessings because John Daly, I mean, 2 for 2 this year, wins the Southern Am there and now wins his first college tournament. And you mentioned the changes. I think it's very rare when a coach will raise their hand and say, hey, I screwed this one up. And, you know, you talked to Brad McMakin. You tried to get, you know, John Daly to tweak some things with his swing, and I don't want to say broke him, but I think Brad would say that he definitely messed him up. And you know, to have John go from a kid who was hitting it all over the map and now plays kind of a tight little draw, hits fairways, hits greens, he's turned into a player much like a Luke Poulter, you know, much like a Cameron Kucher, though at a younger level. I think these kids get so much fanfare early because of the last name, and a lot of them don't kind of live up to it. But credit to John Daly II. I mean, he's become a guy who, I mean, heck, we could potentially see him make some noise in PGA Tour U here.
Mark Simpson, Colorado Invitational, Arkansas State. They edged the host Buffs by one. They both passed Long Beach State on the final day. And then the Ironwood Classic, East Carolina, 8 clear of UCF. That's how things are on the men's side. And I know you got your hand up, so jump on in.
I totally forgot to include this tournament in the rundown. But LSU wins the Brian Bros Invitational by 3 shots over Charlotte. Really good Charlotte team. Ryan Cabbage always has those guys ready to play and ready to compete pretty much all season long. But yeah, so LSU gets another win, and maybe another team that, along with Oklahoma State, that has kind of been playing some good golf and hasn't seen a lot of adversity yet.
That was
my fault.
That's all right. You just, you know, you're not supporting the capital city, the Midlands of South Carolina.
I'm not supporting YouTube golf. Yeah.
Correct. That's it on the men's side. Again, Jacob Modleski from Notre Dame joined Brentley earlier. We'll hear that conversation in just a little bit. Checking up with the women, the Windy City Collegiate, Duke and Northwestern both share the team honors. And UCLA's Younghoon Lee, the individual winner, and a lot of missing players because right now we're got the World Amateur Team Championship some 5,000-7,000 miles away. So it's part of the fabric of what coaches have to deal with because you want your kids to have opportunities, yet you're going to miss them in some college events.
Well, we have to start by wishing a very happy birthday to Dan Brooks. Duke, they didn't say what birthday this is. I assume maybe 51, 52, someplace right around there for Dan, but we've talked about it earlier. I mean, you look at how they finished last year with the worst finish in ACC championship history, 10th, don't make the NCAA championships, struggle at NCAA regionals. To get a win here, and I realize it's a co-win, and I realize Stanford and ASU were playing just individuals, but to do it without Rianne Malixie, who's by far your best player, to have 3 players in the top 6, this could be one of those moments that we look back and say, all right, this is where it kind of started to turn back around for this program. But yeah, it's a tough time of year, especially with World Amateur Team going on. We're going to see that with the men coming up next week as well. But I think a lot of people are wondering, because so ASU has maybe 6 players on their roster, and they have 3 at World Amateur Team in Singapore. Stanford, judging by their roster, it seemed like they could have fielded a team still for this. So maybe just something.
Well, I'm not sure. You have Mega is over there.
Well, so Paula, they have 4. They have
Paula
4,
and Andrea and then Maya Ortengren. So
they have 9 players on the roster.
Ann Walker on the bat phone.
We should.
Blessings Collegiate for the ladies, double dipping there in Arkansas. Razorbacks, they win again. 36-shot victory over Kent State. Avery Weed, the medalist for Mississippi State. There's a sneaky good player Great name for golf. Avery Weed can play, so another W for her. Some other results, the Molly Collegiate, no Stanford, so Oregon State wins by a couple over Boise State. Notre Dame taking care of business at home, the Fighting Irish Classic, a 24-stroke victory over Youngstown State, that is.
Youngstown, isn't it Youngstown?
I don't know. I mean, I should know since I'm in that area. Yeah. Now, I drove through Youngstown or went that direction to go to Pittsburgh the other day for Atlantic 10 Men's Basketball Media Day. Did you know it is the 50th anniversary of the Atlantic 10, the conference? We're celebrating a milestone.
How many people are at that media day?
Counting everyone, I'll say almost 1,000.
Wow.
Because every team has their men's and women's coach, their best players. So right there, there's maybe it's aggressive. Maybe it's in 500, but a lot of media. All the national networks were there. Thrilled.
Did you do on-tape stuff or just
sit down? Sit down car wash from 8 in the morning to 5:30, a little lunch break in between. Talk to all 14 men's coaches and their player that they brought. Thrilled that I'm going to be calling between 15 and 20 games on USA starting in December. And, you know, I kind of threw my name in the hat a few years ago, got a couple of games, and now lo and behold, I think my passion for college sports will continue to grow. But the A-10 can play. You know, it's easy to talk about the Power Four. You look at VCU, you look at George Mason, Loyola, Sister Jean is officially retired at 106 years old.
That social media post scared me for a second.
Anytime I know, I saw it because I told my boys my first game's at Loyola early December, Princeton against Loyola. And they're like, are you going to see Sister Jean? I said, I hope so, because I got to meet her 2 years ago and got a picture with her. And then I saw the post. I said, oh, my gosh. Now, luckily, she's just retiring. That's and good. 106 is aggressive. That's divine intervention there. So that was a complete sidebar, but I'm thrilled.
That was a great sidebar.
Well,
people will appreciate the Sister Jean. What was she retiring from? What was her responsibilities?
She had an open door policy. Anyone, when she had her office hours, could come in and talk to her. Now, Drew Valentine, the coach from Loyola, says they see each other quite often. She'll text and she's dialed in. Hey, how's that guy with his injury? Is Miles working on his three-point shot? And all in at 106. So it's not just a figurehead. Sister Jean is dialed into Loyola Chicago. So, December through March, a lot of college basketball. I'm excited. Before we get to your interview with Jacob Modleski, and before we get to the tourney name of the week, an enormous game three in downtown Cleveland.
What time does that start? One? Is that
108? 108.
They kind of screwed you guys with the early game, but the shadows. The shadows were terrible yesterday.
It was not great. I thought about making the drive as Northeast Ohio, now my home. But I'm like, let's see if they can get through it. Maybe ALCS or something. Lifelong Indian fan. And apologies for those that call them the Guardians, but I am not on the bandwagon. I've got a jersey from 94, the first year Jacobs Field opened. So we know how this is going to play out. As a Jets fan, you know, Cleveland is very similar to being disappointed, but let's hope. Let's hope. No team hotter in baseball the last 6 weeks than the Cleveland folks.
So I have
my sidebars are everywhere right now.
I have five tournaments for the tournament name of the week.
All right. What do we got?
Senatorial tournament name of the week. Let's start with the tournament of the Knights hosted by Warner Pacific NAIA. So you got play into my alma mater a little bit. Although I don't know if these are Golden Knights. They may just be, I don't know what color Knights they are. You have the run-in at the Ranch, Oregon Tech NAIA. That sounds a little bit ominous. Autumn Harvest, so you can get your pumpkins and hopefully get a trophy. That's hosted by Lehigh. And then the Commander in Chief's Cup at Wingfoot. Navy wins.
Ooh.
It's an 8-count-6 event from the looks of it. Because I looked at the scores and they were really high, and I'm like, oh my goodness. But I think it was 8-count-6, and so those are the options. Oh, and there's one more. This one might win. You have the Trolls Classic, Trinity Christian NAIA. What are we going with? What's the best name?
I like the Autumn Invitational, the Autumn Breeze, the
harvest.
Fall leaves. Yeah. Give me that. It's that time of the year. It's early October. I've got some fall foliage outside the window.
Do you decorate for Halloween? Are you one of those people?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And as I've learned here in the Midwest, they don't cheat themselves. Middle of September, it's up. We already got booed last night, October 1st. Our neighbors booed us. And they will have Christmas up in November, and they won't take it down till March. And most of it I'm learning. I'm not saying it's on, but they're like, it's so cold or there's snow.
Everyone said, get up early.
So very aggressive, and I'm a full-fledged supporter of the holidays. So we
Hallmark movie.
Oh, don't tease me. We've got 15 days from now, the first Hallmark Christmas movie. You know, there's on Instagram, I'm way off the rails today. There's a Deck the Halls podcast where they each week break down the upcoming Christmas movies. And I will own it. I will watch all new 28, 38, 48 Hallmark movies. I'll record them. I'll carve out the time. I am a sucker at heart when it comes to those. I can write them because we know how they're going to end up, but way too much information for people looking for college golf intel.
Yeah, the Hallmark movie is always kind of are those like the Lifetime movies or no? Those are different.
Yeah,
Lifetime movies are like the, you know, the ex comes back and murders everyone around the holidays. Like that's like Lifetime movies, right?
Yeah, Hallmark has gotten a little more off script, you know, because you could truly just map it out, plug and play. So they've changed it up. But then you have the Great American Network, or Candace Cameron Bure and Danica McKellar have left Hallmark to go over there. I need to get on that podcast. I follow them. I want to be a part of it. I know they're not listening to College Golf Talk.
No, probably not.
But I believe I could add something as a special guest.
Well, we'll have to get on that. Maybe we'll clip this bit and tag him in it.
Wait, when it gets cooler, I will have my Christmas sweater, Hallmark movie. I'm all in. I'm old enough that I don't care what people think.
Wow, that's
we've really lost the plot here today. By the way,
that's I'm not quite in that lane yet. Maybe one day.
Yeah, wow. I'm old.
I don't have time to watch movies.
Ugh, I barely have time either. That is hopefully what everyone was expecting today on College Golf Talk. We appreciate you listening, but don't go anywhere. It's time for Brentley's conversation with the Notre Dame standout Jacob Modleski.
Well, we're welcoming in Jacob Modleski. Jacob, it's been a busy stretch for you. USAM after a long summer, Walker Cup, and already 3 fall tournaments. Well, first off, thanks for coming on. And also, how's the energy level?
Energy level's good. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to being on the show.
Now, for those who can't see who are just listening to this, you have a Notre Dame flag off to your left and an American flag. Talk about the significance of the decor and what looks like, it kind of looks like a little bit of an army barracks there. It doesn't quite look like a dorm room. You got a bunk bed.
Yeah, it's, I'm a single in a double size room. So I bunked the beds to give me some more space. But I think both those flags are, they sum up kind of the motto of Notre Dame, God, Country, Notre Dame. And, being able to play in the Walker Cup, certainly, was a lifelong dream, and it is a testament to my love of Notre Dame and the country for sure.
Well, let's talk about the Walker Cup. You've had a few weeks now to digest that week and that experience. What do you feel like you took away most from being a part of that squad?
I'd say honestly, took away most is just being around those guys for that week and kind of seeing what it's like to be a part of that team and represent the United States. It was cool. We had Ben and Stu, who had obviously been there before. So like the biggest thing was just learning from them, trying to take everything in and make sure that like you just said, you know, I'm documenting everything, trying to, you know, write down all the things that happened so I can come back and look at those in the future, because there's so much that happens in such a short amount of time. It's a very, very busy week.
Do you typically journal? Like, have you been doing that for quite a while?
Yeah, I have. And it's not necessarily all just golf. But I think it helps me a lot reflect, make sure I'm kind of where I want to be. It's really easy in college golf to kind of get ahead of yourself. You got a lot of events coming up. There's always something to look forward to. So it makes it really easy maybe to forget about a week that you didn't have your best stuff and move on to the next week. But it can be harder to make sure you kind of focus on what you did well and when you played well. And honestly, even when you just had great experiences, regardless of how you played.
Now, someone whose journal isn't quite as long as yours is Mason Howell. You partnered with him. What was your takeaway from what an 18-year-old who didn't even know that getting into the final of the USAM got you into the Masters and the US Open, didn't even know about the Walker Cup automatic exemption? What was your observation of seeing what he was able to do on the big stage?
Yeah, he's a very mature player. And it was really cool to see. You know, there was no part of that week in any way that seemed like he wasn't up for it or wasn't immediately ready to kind of jump in. And when your partner's making 35 footers from all over the map, it's awesome. I just had to hit it somewhere on the green and let him putt. So, but no, he was a great partner. I thought we gelled together really well. It was just such a cool experience to be paired with him.
There might have been other guys on that team that were more nervous than he was.
100%. Yeah, no, he was ready to take down just about anything.
Now, you went straight from Cyprus to your first college event in Michigan at American Dunes Folds of Honor. Most guys would have said, "All right, I'm done. I'm exhausted. Like, it's September. Like, I'm all right, coach. Just let me go home and get some rest." But you chose to go play. Tell us what that travel was like. How'd you make it there in time, and why was it important for you to be there to tee it up?
Yeah, so Coach and I talked about that before I had left for the summer. Coach was like, you know, we're looking ahead. If you're on the team, what do you want to do? So it wasn't something that I was, you know, kind of saddled with after the USAM. It was something I had kind of prepared for, and I told Coach, it, you know, as long as you think I'll make it there, you know, like that night, I want to play. And I felt like if there was a chance I could contribute to the team, then it was kind of my obligation to be there and tee it up for the boys here. And it was a bit of a long night. I took off from Cyprus at 9:45, maybe landed at 4:30 local time, and we had a 2 p.m. tee time, so I was actually feeling pretty good on the first tee. I was a little more tired the second day, in the 8 a.m. tee time, but no, it was fun. I definitely would do it again. I just felt like if I could help, then it's kind of my job.
So your Walker Cup celebration got cut a little bit short.
A little bit. I had plenty of time, to spend with the guys at Cyprus. So I was basically there all the way until they hopped on the bus and went back to the hotel. But I still got a fair amount of celebration. I was there for all the ceremonies and pictures, and it was really cool.
Yeah, that would have been strange if you would have, you know, jet set it off before pictures and there's nine
yeah.
guys.
Yeah, and, yeah, no, Smith I, of the photos. I made sure I was there for all parts of the evening except for the last part.
Now, you have three top 10s already. I think I was going back this year alone in college golf, seven top fives, which has to be, if not number one in college golf, has to be up there. But what do you credit to that consistency, how you're able to kind of show up event after event?
I think a lot of it probably comes down to the not physical parts of golf. I feel like I make sure that I think well around the golf course and do everything I can to prepare and have a very good plan of how I'm going to attack a golf course. And, you know, execution can be all over the board, but that's one thing that I'm kind of fully in control of. And I feel like it allows me to play within myself and play with whatever game I have, whether I've got my best stuff or, you know, maybe something less than that. And yeah, I feel like it's, you know, it builds to consistency, because like I said, it's the only thing that I can control week in and week out.
What does your yardage book look like? If you had to give us kind of a synopsis of yeah. maybe what a...
So there's a decade chart on the top, with a few other factors of things that I factor in, you know, to I don't know if anyone's familiar with decade, to subtract and add extra distances away from short sides of the greens. Then there's a big wedge book on the bottom. Yeah, those are kind of the two things I focus on in terms of course management and distance control. And I feel like if I can control those two things well, I'll play well most of the time.
Does it change at all based on how you're playing, kind of how you attack a golf course? Or
No. And it's something that I've worked to not change. And it really takes a lot of discipline when you're, you know, 500 through 12 and you got a flag that's back left and it just fits your eye for that high draw. But, I feel like I've done well so far this year. There's still room to improve, in terms of, you know, making sure you're very disciplined to the targets you're selecting. But no, I'd like to say no, it doesn't change at all.
Now there's probably a reason why you have such great attention to detail and your meticulous nature probably goes back to how you were raised. Talk about
For sure.
your beginnings in golf. How'd you get introduced to it? And what were those early days? Like, how did you learn how to, you know, become the player that you are?
So I grew up playing a lot with my older brother, and then playing a lot with my grandfather. So my mom and dad play golf, but not a whole lot. Whenever we visit my grandfather, we'd go out and play, whether it was in Chicago or down in Florida. I grew up playing at home mostly with my brother. And so I got to watch him play all through high school golf as a spectator. And then as I got into, you know, middle school and high school golf, I was taking it a little bit more seriously, but it wasn't really until maybe sophomore year of high school that I was like, all right, this is, you know, I want to play golf. I played freshman basketball and freshman soccer. Had no career as a goalie at 5'5" and 100 pounds. So I think I made a better decision in terms of what sport I wanted to stick with. But
why'd they have you in goal?
I could catch my feet. I played football, and so my solution was to play soccer my freshman year. I was you know, 5 foot, like I said, 5'4" or 5" and 100 and nothing pounds. So I figured soccer, at least I'd have a chance. But of course my footwork was no good, so I could catch. But yeah, I didn't take out much of the goal. So it wasn't the most maybe successful position for me, but I enjoyed it. And there's nothing I'd change about any of the sports I played growing up. Golf was kind of a later addition, in terms of a sport that I took really seriously, but I'm glad I didn't, you know, jump into it too young. A lot of the early memories I have are very not competitive and very much just kind of learning to enjoy the game. And then once I was at, you know, 14 or 15 years old, that's when I really wanted to take it serious.
What were those non-competitive days like? I mean, we hear kids all the time talk about, they remember like getting a soda or a slice of pizza afterwards. Is that kind of similar with you?
Yeah. It's, it would be just spending time with my grandfather and my brother and my dad. There's a lot of rounds we all four played together. And yeah, I'll remember those. I'll remember those moments forever, for sure.
Now your dad has a pretty cool career. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so he was in the Air Force for 20 years. He flew F-16s, A-10s, was on Thunderbirds for 2 years. And like you mentioned, in terms of how I was raised, it definitely played a role, a big role. He coached our middle school football team growing up, and definitely learned a lot from him about leadership. Learned a lot from him in terms of, you know, not necessarily, you know, basically just acting right, making the right decisions, and kind of understanding how they impact you down the road. But like things you've mentioned, like attention to detail, you know, focusing on doing your job are a lot of the same, you know, principles we took away from youth sports or just around the house with my brother. We got into our fair share of problems, as most brothers do. But yeah, he played a big role in where I am now, for sure.
Now, he also wrote a book. Have you read the book?
I have read the book. It's been a little while since I've read the book, but I am aware that I'm in there, and I'm about 7 years old with a buzz cut. So it's funny to go back and look at some of the pictures that are in that book, and you know, read through some of the stories that obviously I know I'm a part of. And yeah, you know, my dad's played such a big role in my life, and that book speaks volumes about him as a person and the role he's had.
Well, we'll pub his book a little bit on here if people want to go buy it. It's called The yeah. American Dream and What We Must Do to Secure Our Children's Dreams, and it's Matthew Mudleski. So it's on Amazon. I think it's available. So
should
people
be.
Go check that out. The recruiting process for you, what if you had to describe, you know, maybe the level of recruit you were, how would you kind of contextualize that?
I would say I was a solid recruit, especially in the Midwest. But I wasn't a super nationally touted recruit. Now, I heard from schools, maybe from a little bit of all over, but I wasn't, you know, between the SEC and Notre Dame, or between, you know, powerhouse, maybe not powerhouse golf schools, but I was mostly in the Midwest. And once I visited Notre Dame, it was extremely clear that that's where I wanted to go, which is exactly what you want in the recruiting process. You want to go to a place and kind of see it and experience the campus and meet all the people and think, you know, that's where you want to go. And that was exactly what happened in Notre Dame. I fell in love with the place. I came for a night game against North Carolina a few years ago. And I mean, if you go to a night game at Notre Dame and don't walk out of there thinking like, yeah, I'd like to go there, then I don't know. I feel like something might be wrong. So I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah. I imagine North Carolina was a little bit better a couple years ago on the football field than they are now with Bill Belichick.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it was a pretty good game. I remember watching, I think it was Kyron Williams run like 92 yards down the sideline. I was, you know, basically in an end zone. And yeah, I still remember that. So it was some cool memories from that night.
Now, Notre Dame's has pretty elite facilities as well. The Warren Course, which has hosted, you know, numerous tournaments, USGA events. What do you feel like stands out about where you guys get to spend every day?
I think it's probably just how well kept it is. And that's a testament to Matt Yops and the whole crew at Warren. They go, I mean, it's a public course. It gets pretty beat up, and those guys just take unbelievable care of us and of the facility. And yeah, we're really grateful to have such a great team, because they, you know, they keep it in phenomenal condition for us. When we come back in the fall, it's like absolutely perfect. There is not one divot on the whole tee deck. And on top of that, we're blessed to have very, very good indoor resources, which is an important piece of being competitive in the off season when we're kind of stuck indoors. And coach does everything he can to get us down, you know, down on grass as often as he can. So we're really just fortunate with kind of what we're able to do, from an off season and an in season basis.
How many times have you played Seminole, you know, with the connection to Jimmy Dunn?
I've played Seminole. We've gone down there once as a team, and then I was down there last year for the practice session, the Orca practice session. So just twice.
What's your relationship like with Mr. Dunn?
It's great. He's such an important piece of our program. I was fortunate to see him at Cypress. You know, he came up and just said he's, you know, so proud, and it's always great to see him. You know, he's got such a busy schedule, and he's so important in the game of golf. And so to have somebody like that kind of on your team and behind you is just, it means a lot.
Yeah, it was the first time I was at Seminole, you know, knowing that the T markers are the same paint as the helmets at Notre Dame, and you got the, you know, be a champion today sign there. It's pretty neat, the connection that he has. I mean, it's like all of our schools that we go to, we love our schools, and it's cool that he has that impact. For you, your the turning point, I feel like, was your freshman year Jones Cup. You win that, that kind of put you on the map nationally at an amateur level. What do you feel like that week did for you?
It did a lot. It opened a lot of doors. It made a lot of things possible in terms of scheduling summer events and connections to people. But it wouldn't have been possible without a lot of people kind of going to bat for me. I'm sure you're familiar with the story, but I was an alternate, and I was only an alternate because Coach Hannergan and some other people at Notre Dame and beyond vouched really hard for me to try to get in that field, and felt like if I was just could get in the field, I'd have a chance to compete. And so it was really cool to end up winning that tournament, knowing that, obviously I was the one that was playing, but it wouldn't have been possible without so many other people kind of helping me. And there's not many schools that would have gotten a freshman with, maybe my resume. Not that I didn't think I could play well or compete or win, but there's not many places that would have kind of gone to bat or and somehow been able to get me in that field, like Notre Dame. And so I'm just grateful for all the people that kind of made that happen, because it, like you said, it was such a big part of, first stepping stones of my big time amateur career, and it just wouldn't have been possible without other people.
And then it got you into the RSM Classic as well. Kind of yep. Later that year.
Yeah, it did.
What were your takeaways from playing in your first PGA Tour event?
It was a great event. I love Sea Island. Every time I get to go down to Sea Island, it's just such an awesome experience. I didn't have much of my best stuff from a golf perspective, but it didn't take away from my ability to kind of learn and reflect on the week. And it was cool to be out there and see a lot of the guys that you watched on TV and get to see them in person, warm up next to them on the range, in the locker room. And yeah, I think the next time I've got an opportunity to play in one of those events, I'll be a little bit more calm about it. I think, with every amateur's first PGA Tour event, you're kind of a little bit on edge. And it was just cool to get out there. And, once you're on the golf course, it's just around the golf. So go out there and play. And I'm looking forward to the next opportunity I might have.
Yeah, it's definitely a good event to kind of tiptoe into, because it's the fall, it's the last event, although the pressure's amped because everyone's fighting for their jobs too. People call it kind of a sleepy tournament, but it's pretty cutthroat.
No, there's a lot going on that week for sure.
Now, the Walker Cup pressure this year, obviously you were on the bubble the entire way basically. Was that pretty noticeable for you just from your, from a stress standpoint, or did you feel like you did a pretty good job, kind of keeping it at bay?
It was noticeable early in the summer. The first couple events like NCAAs, Sunny Hanna AM, the Northeast AM, I was definitely not letting it affect me, but it was more present in my mind, because, it's crazy to think about, but one good week there basically solidifies your spot on the whole team, just based off rankings and kind of what winning one of those events can do for you. So it was a little bit too present in my mind, and I struggled at the Northeast AM. I didn't have much of my best stuff, and I had an opportunity after that tournament to kind of think about how I was letting some of those things affect me. And I did a really, really good job the last four events of the summer, just knowing that it was there, but not letting it be at the forefront of my mind. And every time I would kind of think about it, whether it be on or off the golf course, just reminding myself that at the end of the day, I can't control that. I could go out and finish, third, second, whatever, and it's still up to a committee. There's no, there's only so much I can control. And I did a really, really good job, especially at the Western and the USAM, knowing how important those two tournaments were, just kind of focusing in on what I could control and focusing in on, the next shot basically. And but I think it was a strength coming down the stretch that I was able to do that, because it was a very pressure filled situation for sure.
Where did you feel like you were in terms of your status for that team going into the quarterfinals of the USAM against Nile?
I felt like it was pretty strong. I felt like between quarter semifinals and the championship match, everyone there are a handful of us left in that, you know, I think there were three or four guys that were all in the bubble left maybe in the round of 16. Mm-hmm. And so at that point it was more just, you know, whoever kind of makes it the furthest. So I wasn't thinking about it too much, but I felt like I had done a lot of what I could do, and I just kept trying to do the same thing, which was control what I could control. And it was a great match. You know, I wish I could go back and flip the script, but it was an awesome match. And I left everything out there, and Captain Smith came up and said something after that, you know, he hoped I'd be able to run it back against those guys in a few weeks. And so yeah, I just kind of sat on edge there for a day or so and hoped.
Yeah, what was that like, you know, being in that? Because I had to do interviews in it, but to basically go up against a kid where his entire hometown is out there following, walking the fairways, making noise. I mean, people talk about the Ryder Cup. These guys were in the fairway with you. What was that like, and how proud are you of yourself for being able to handle that type of atmosphere?
Yeah, it was an interesting experience, and I'm grateful I got to experience it. I think there's a couple ways I could look at it. You know, I could look at it and say, you know, the crowd maybe wasn't perfect and this or that, but at the end of the day, you know, you're still like, no one was out there yelling in my backswing. No one was out there. Like, it wasn't, you know, honestly, compared to this past week, what we saw, it was pretty tame.
Yeah,
not so,
even close. Yeah.
It was a great experience, to play in that sort of an environment. And it's something that I hope I get to experience again. Cause I think normally if you're experiencing something like that, that means you're probably playing somewhere else other than a USAM on American soil. So, the next time that I'm in a situation like that, I know I'll be ready. And, it was great, great preparation for sure.
Your PGA Tour University clock started, I think after NCAAs. So, but you know, you already have three top tens toward that, as we were talking about earlier. Where does that rank in terms of, you know, goals for the next 2 years, and what are some of your long-term goals as you, finish out your college career?
Yeah, I mean, PGA Tour U has been such a great program, and I think I'm taking the same approach that I took to how I, you know, took to the Walker Cup to PGA Tour U, that it's such an out there, it's so far away, and even as it gets closer, it shouldn't change how much it's on my mind. I think if I can just go out and focus on playing good golf, one term at a time, one round at a time, one shot at a time, then, you know, whatever happens, and I can live with that. The only thing I want to be able to say that I didn't do is go out there and, you know, thought about PGA Tour U and thought about this and thought about, you know, where I was going into the week and what, you know, X finish would do for me, because I feel like if I'm in that headspace, then I haven't done everything I can do to play well. And, you know, long-term, obviously the goals of PGA Tour card and, you know, to play and win on the PGA Tour, and everyone's got a different path to get there. So, we'll see what that path holds for me.
So you have two more events left this fall. You guys, I believe, host, and then you play North Carolina's event, the Williams Cup, maybe another potential rematch with Nile. You guys have seen a lot of each other, but what's it like? It's going to be, I assume maybe is there a football game that overlaps kind of with the week of your guys' home event, or what's that going to be like?
We've got a... Our home event's awesome. Coach does such a great job of making the event, you know, a really good golf tournament and also a really fun experience for everyone. This year we actually pushed the tournament back a day, so all the teams are going to the football game on Saturday. Sunday's the practice round. We have dinner at the stadium, and afterwards everyone goes out on the field, and we lightly lightly jog and throw a football around.
Okay.
Make sure we don't jam any fingers or roll any ankles.
Kick field goals.
Yeah. Ours are more from the 20 to 25 range. There are some, you know, there's people out there that are trying to boot them in from 45, but yeah, it's a really cool experience just to be out there, especially having seen a game the day before. For a lot of people, it'll be awesome. And then yeah, the tournament's 36 Monday and 18 Tuesday.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, thanks so much for the time. I know you got to get to class. What class are you going to?
I'm going to predictive analytics.
Okay. What's your major?
It's a business analytics. So it's an R. It's basically an R class.
All right. Well, I'll be crossing my fingers that you pass your next test and that.
Because, thank you.
I wouldn't be able to.
I appreciate it.
Again, thanks so much, and we'll see you at some point down the road.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, and yeah.